Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulist Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
In this audio cast number 18, I'm going to have a conversation with a social rideshare driver, and it's going to be uber cool.
One, two,
so just
three. Listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a very unique conversation with a social rideshare driver. Obviously, you have those apps that can basically be a little bit more of a socially minded taxi cab ride. But it's not, because a taxi cab driver doesn't have to be social. In fact, many of them are kind of anti-social. And this drive to the airport one morning was hardly anything but antisocial. It was one of the most edifying, most unique experiences I've had going to the airport. So in this amuse-bouche appetizer part of the show, here's a couple little silly jokes for you. Here's one. Who earns a living driving customers away? Obviously a taxi cab driver. And here's one about a hearse driver who had driven a hearse for 25 years, and today was his first day as a taxi driver. And he was very nervous, so he picked up a man and was driving to the destination. But as they were driving, the man in the back seat wanted to ask him a question, so tapped him on the guy's shoulder. And the driver obviously crashed because he was scared to death. Kind of interesting, but you know, this particular show got me thinking on so many deep levels. And you know, there's that phrase, if you really want to get to know somebody, you got to walk a mile in their shoes. Or in this case, you basically have to drive a few miles with someone in their own car. So get ready for an awesome, very unique, deep dish discussion with a social rideshare driver when we return for more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. This show is brought to you by a public service announcement from the World Meeting of Families, and you can learn all about worldmeeting2018.ie. You see, this is going to be a gathering with the Holy Father from August 21st through Sunday the 26th, with a closing mass with the Holy Father, with thousands of people from Ireland and all around the world. And this year's theme is the Gospel of the Family, Joy for the World. So if you want tickets or learn more information about it and to come see me, because I'm one of the featured speakers there, simply go to worldmeeting2018.ie today. And welcome back for a deep dish discussion with a very special guest, someone that maybe you would never necessarily get to know, but guess what? It's my job. And so I asked to interview a professional ride share driver. And what's interesting is that usually when I do ride share, whether it be Uber or Lyft in the Baltimore area, generally on my way to the airport, I can figure out generally who the kind of person it is who's going to pick me up. But this one was different. First of all, the name showed up as Leslie. And then there's a dude in the car. So Leslie, welcome to the show and thanks for being on.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Let me ask you, when you first, what was it that made you start doing professional rideshare? Like socially ride-sharing people?
The money.
The money? Okay. Were you kind of working at one point?
Yeah, it's means to an end, mix and grab, you know. I have like three or four jobs and merge the two together.
And how many jobs do you have then? Because some people make it their entire life, right? I mean, to just do the ride shares the entire life.
I have like three or four economically sustainable jobs. There's an array of working with people and adults with developmental disabilities, to coaching, refereeing soccer, the ride share. As we just discussed, sitting for art groups to have my face drawn.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So in other words, when we are sitting in a ride share experience, whether it's just for a few miles, or what was the longest you ever had to drive somebody?
My second night, BWI to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Holy
11
cow.
O'clock at night.
And 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
And whoa, I mean, so how many hours is that then? It's about 2 hours,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was about two and a half. And then this is when the rideshare programs were first getting off the ground. And they didn't have the destination fielders, the time fielders. So that's what happened, that I couldn't pick and choose who and what. So I ended up picking someone up from BWI. And they're like, oh, Harrisburg, PA, that's fine, right? Oh, sure. So trying to text my wife saying, yeah, I'll be home late.
So can you just answer a few logistical questions. Are you allowed to just reject somebody?
You can, but of course it goes against your score. And I've got, of the 3,000 drives I've done, I got a 96% five-star rating. So,
yeah.
I mean, I try not to reject or, you know, upset people, because that's against the premise of the whole model, you know?
Sure.
I mean, plus I don't mind going anywhere because it's interesting and exciting to me.
Well, and that is kind of how it all started. And that's why you're on this show, just shooting the shiitake with me. When you got my call and I was going to the airport, because that's what I do, I basically live there, you see this little Filipino thing. What are you thinking? I mean, honestly, your thoughts?
Just another businessman going on an appointment here, there, and wherever he's going. And but then find out, you know, you're interested in being a priest and your food interest and all this
well,
kind of stuff.
The whole thing was you made me sit up front with you. So remember, I sat up front with you because there was just some stuff in the back. Usually people want you to sit in the back, but you made me sit up front. And then I just started realizing, you're not a normal Uber driver here.
Right. Well, I think the premise of the model may have been lost through misinterpretation over the last few years.
What do you mean?
It's a person with a car that can help someone else get to where they're going.
Sure.
And for that privilege, you get to pay a nominal fee.
Sure.
Based on how far you want to travel. It's become like a tier system of the cab companies. Is that we're so used to what cab companies have been for the last few years.
Correct.
And some customers have taken that model and say, well, I don't need to know you. You're my driver. Get me to where I'm going. And so I know I've tried to speak to many cab drivers.
Do you talk to your clients generally?
Yeah. I mean, I probably talk too much, but...
Well, okay. And obviously, you are not from these parts of Balmer.
Right.
Where are you from?
Well, I get that all the time. What part of Australia are you from? What part of South Africa are you from?
Yep.
I'm like, well, I'm actually from England.
Well, I kind of figured that one out, obviously. So,
right.
So what part of England are you from?
The southeast, place called Maidstone in Kent, which is in between London and Dover, which is the big ferry terminal.
Sure.
And where the Eurotunnel is to get over to France and Europe.
And you're just a big, tall, white guy who has a Romanesque face.
Right.
And that's why you're photographed and painted quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't,
right.
You don't know exactly where we can see your face, except for on my Facebook page, where I'm going to take a picture of us, certainly for this show.
Right.
But when you are driving and you're experiencing a whole bunch of different people in your car. That's a pretty vulnerable experience, it seems.
Yes, and...
Have you ever felt like you were in danger?
Well, there's been two situations where I was put in danger.
Oh.
Dealt with that. And, but like I said, of the 3,000 drives, it's not even 1.1% of the incidences. The other 99.9, you know, have been great interactions. And it's the first impressions, right? I mean, I can tell within the first 30 seconds if someone wants to talk, someone wants to be left alone. And I'm like, I've got the air conditioning on. If you can put your seatbelts on, you let me know what you need. I can even change the radio for you if you want. I'm actually going to get, they've got promotion now for these TV, interactive TV screens.
Yeah.
So I've got to go and pick one up on as soon as possible so the customer can play like quiz games and look at the internet in the back of the car. So I'm going to be doing that in the next few days. But anything to get the ratings. And then, you know, the more successful you are, the more you're going to be able to achieve. And that's just like everything in general in life, you know. I mean, I'm sure yourself with your food and, you know, being a priest and all that.
Have you ever driven a priest around before?
I have driven some priests around. And I've driven other individuals of other denominations and faiths and everything. The consumer, I guess.
Sure, we're consumers. Right. We're consumers like everybody else, but oftentimes people don't always... We have our perceptions, which is kind of what I want to talk about. These perceptions that these rideshare programs are, in a sense, trying to break down or at least make connections. Because... Everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole notion of this popular 70s or 80s TV show Taxi, it really was about the stories of the people there. And that's what I want to do. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this show is because you told me a glimpse of your story. Why did you come to America? And tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up.
Oh, when I first came to America, I came to work at summer camps with kids, adults with developmental disabilities.
Yep.
And that was in Michigan.
And why? I mean, that's not...
Right. But I mean, my first... Going back to my own situation, I had a sister with profound cerebral palsy, foster sister in England.
A foster sister.
Right. And that's because I grew up in the foster care social services system in England. My dad was a Royal Engineer in the local barracks in the 70s. I was born in 72. So 72, 73, there was the Middle East oil crisis. He got stationed, he got deployed to the Middle East. My mother was at home, single. You know, I was a newborn baby. She wasn't able to cope on her own with such a young child. And one reason or another, there was concluded neglect and abuse. And so instead of the social services at the time, this is all recollections and stories that I've been told. At 3 months old, I can't remember this. My mama asked for help. That help wasn't forthcoming. But what was forthcoming is like a bit like the Ravens, I mean, the Colts going in the middle of the night. Social services come sweeping down in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I was whisked out of there.
Uh-huh.
You know, they didn't probably have the support mechanisms in place then. It was like act now, think later.
Sure.
And so from the ages of about 3 months old, I was in the social services.
How many homes were you in?
Going back from what I've been told, I moved down to a family in Hastings, the Battle of Hastings, 1066, and how England got conquered by William the Conqueror and all that, which is the first time, well, since then, a thousand years of English heritage since then, 1066.
I'm getting a history lesson here from my Uber driver. Right? I love this.
Right, but the foster family husband, the father, he died in a car accident.
Oh.
So that was pretty quickly once again.
You had to move on.
Right.
They moved you on.
Right. So I go back to another children's home, you know, social services department.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved to this place called Kingswood.
Okay.
And it's Kingswood because it was the woods of the kings, the royal family, where they would do their hunting and gathering. You know, and...
So at least three up to this point, but can you remember, was it like more than five or...
By the age of two,
probably
two or three different placements.
Oh my gosh.
And then...
And you wouldn't have known nonetheless. So where were you most raised from your memory on? I mean, did you stay at one place?
Yeah, the family in Kingswood,
mm-hmm.
who then fostered my sister.
Your sister with cerebral palsy.
Cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And they had two older sisters there, a younger sister, and then Louise, which was her name. She was the youngest. And then, so I stayed at this with this family in Kingswood, which is near Leeds Castle, which is a very picturesque castle. Sure. You could study it on the internet and find out about this place. And on the weekends, used to go on my push bike with my buddies, go into the gardens and see the exotic birds, the flowers and the displays.
Basically, Leslie here is just putting a promotion for touring England in the picturesque. Right? He will give you rides everywhere.
Right.
But just know that he's going to be driving on the other side of the road and on the other side of the car. So you were raised in the foster care system, but this family that raised you since you were what, two?
Yeah, I would say two.
Until,
year and a half to two, yeah.
Until, like, when did you come to America?
11 or 13 is when I found out that my foster family.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, young kid anyway, young boy, I just started becoming belligerent, thinking, well, who are these people then if they're not my parents and this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then finding out, you know, about my real family and all that kind of stuff. So then I remember to this day my foster mum sitting on the bed saying, well, where do you think if you ever thought about moving away? And I said, as long as I could come and visit you and all this kind of stuff. And so I actually moved to a children's home. And then the second day I called them and said, I want to move back. And they said, no, it was a stone wall. No.
Wow.
And I felt my world fall apart and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm going to be stuck in this group home. Who knows and what knows and
sure,
how knows.
I mean, my God, you're reminding me of Oliver.
Right, right. Well, it kind of looked like Oliver, right? Can
kinda.
I have some more?
More, please.
Right. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I've got the personality now, but our experience is what makes what we are now. And then coming to America.
When did you come to America? What age?
94, so I was 20.
You were 20.
21,
22.
21, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, September, so 21 and a half.
21 years old.
But
from your time when you were 11 to 21, you were in foster care?
Foster care and
in a
sporadic.
Group home?
Yeah, and sporadic foster placements, like two or three placements.
Were you like a bad kid?
No, I could have been. Statistically high, and I'm sure you could look at the records here in the States too.
Sure.
That anyone that finds themselves
sure.
in an institutional setting
mm-hmm.
can be led astray.
And all of this kind of your experience is going back and forth. Now, folks, this is just from a 20-minute ride. I was so intrigued by Leslie, not just because he was speaking with a different accent, but because you're not a typical Baltimorean here, and you have had an experience. And what really struck me was how you said, my experiences growing up, and I didn't even know you were raised in foster care,
mm-hmm.
you said, is one of the reasons why you decided to come to America to do what?
To work with kids with developmental disabilities, adults with developmental disabilities.
And by the way, is that the most technical term right now? Because it has gone back and forth. So,
well, it's actually Maryland passed a statute that the terminology, there used to be the magic R word. I'm not even going to say it.
Sure.
But restricted, per se. That let's put a synonym there that's
restricted.
Restricted.
And I'll say it because it is just part of the English language. So a form of retardation.
Right.
I don't want to insult anybody. It is just part of our language. And you can use it in a derogatory way, but just from the understanding of tard would be late.
Right.
Just a late learning person. But the language now
is intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Okay.
And you have to all
and you have
gonna,
to say that.
Yeah, and all the layman, not so much.
Sure.
But to be PC, politically correct.
Are you a politically correct kind of guy?
I try to be when it's relevant and purposeful and to be a contributing member of society.
Okay.
You know? I mean, I treat others as I would like to be treated myself, you know? I mean,
sure.
We've all got things that we feel vulnerable about. And if someone mentioned, oh, you're so-and-so kind, you'd be like, well, I feel offended by that. So,
sure. I mean, language matters, but
right.
What drew you to America was what? Just the whole America thing, or was this the job?
It was this, first of all, working at the opportunity. I wouldn't even view it as escapism at that time.
Okay.
But, you know, bouncing around that I had, and then having this opportunity, I mean, it was only stable. I mean,
so you came here on a work visa,
mm-hmm.
and then you decided to become an American?
American. Yes and no. I was at undergraduate at school. For someone, I talked about statistically high, the chances of going off the tracks, being
sure.
in an institution like foster care, social services, are very high. Could have been in the jail system, correctional system, and all
That's
this
right.
kind of stuff. I had many guardians, I guess, caregivers, that kept me on track, you know. And I thank them for the fruits of their labors.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And their investment in me to keep me straight on the track. And I could have easily gone awry.
Sure.
You know, but the...
But something kept you focused, mm-hmm. and something kept you at least in check and on the right road, if I can put in like a rideshare analogy here. Mm-hmm. Because this is, I mean, the whole social rideshare programs is the fact that we are all on a journey, and yours is very unique, and we don't know what the other person is going through. Just like in that show Taxi, mm-hmm. everyone's got a story, and yours is deep, but you want to now help children with mental
intellectual disabilities. Yep.
And I have to ask, why? I mean, because that's not a normal thing.
Well, going through the realms that we've just discussed,
sure.
I was put in the remedial classes at school, you know, and it's not per se because, you know, I suck at math and all this kind of stuff. And then some of my jobs that I've had, like, this individual has a mathematical deficiency. Well, that's like 98% of the population. We'd all need help if that's the case, you know? So we all had different things that we bring to the table.
So you, based on your experience, felt like you could really be of help to them.
Right.
Okay, so let's just switch gears and say, how do you think you are help to them? Besides just having a Romanesque face that they could picture and draw.
Well, I'm hoping that even if I help one person, that's 100% of the cause.
Okay,
you know?
Everybody says that, and I believe it to a degree,
mm-hmm.
but you want to make an impact.
Right, it's by doing.
So
you
and
can
what
talk
are you,
about
what
it
do
forever.
You do? Tell me, what do you do?
I, once again, one of my few jobs, my mainstay career has been working with individuals.
But how so? I mean,
doing the hands-on one-on-one work.
Okay.
Doing the
Many
case management
work. Many people don't know.
Right.
So you're a case manager as well?
Yeah, I've got the opportunity. So this is when I was leaving the foster care system at 18.
Okay.
And I don't know what the U.S. foster care system is. I think they go up to the age of 21, but you have funding up to that day.
Mm-hmm.
Your 18th birthday,
you're
out
of
here. And there was no transitional training. There was nothing. So you have everything given to you, a bit like Oliver, you know. And then when you ask for some more, it's not forthcoming because you've got to fend for yourself. Well, how can you fend for yourself if you've never been trained how and what and when?
Mm-hmm.
So once again, that leads people astray to go and do what they can do to survive. But because I had individuals, foster parents, caregivers, you know, that were paid, compensated to basically look after me. They took an added investment with me and assisted me. Soccer, football,
mm-hmm.
has been a vehicle that's kept me on the tracks. And
Tell me why.
Because it was something I could focus on for a few hours a week, interact with my peers, and forget about all the trials and tribulations of whatever was going on.
Are you a good soccer player? Because it's a very English thing. It's football.
Right, yeah.
Obviously.
If you're not born with a football, soccer ball, or a rugby ball, or a cricket ball, then you must be into art or, you know.
Sure. Okay, so you are definitely a sporty kind of person.
Right, but I'm not your super, super A1 type personality either. You know, I mean, nothing wrong with being an A1 type personality.
You mean
but
like
I'm
someone who's just going to...
Right, in your face.
Yeah, because, I mean, some of them can get really...
Right, I'm not, you know, like that. I mean,
pissing the night away. By the way, what does that even mean?
Just having a good time.
Okay. Not necessarily urinating.
So
for people.
Right.
Okay. Just because that was always an interesting song. But anyway, you're a big soccer player and you help people with mental or intellectual disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by just being very hands-on. But now, from what I understand, you also want to take your passion to help people and your love for soccer mm-hmm. in a different direction. And when we come back, you, Leslie, have one important job: to take me on a ride to make me like soccer. Because while everybody else in this world likes it, I think it is so ridiculously boring, super dramatic, and a low-scoring game by just watching these guys run up and down the field is just as exciting as some people might say praying the rosary before you go to bed at night.
Right.
It is a sleeper for me, which is why you, when we come back, have to take me on a ride to get me to like what you love in life. When we return with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, a non-soccer playing Father Leo. We hope you're enjoying this interview with my special guest with such a great accent. And guess what? From our premium subscribers, those who donate $10 or more each month to the Shoot the Shiitake movement, I've got another special guest with an awesome English accent. His name is David Bates, who is a Catholic, left the Catholic Church, went to the Church of England, and then comes back to the Catholic Church and is now in America to share his story and how he is evangelizing and making it sound so proper. So for all of our premium subscribers who donate just $10 each month, I thank you for your support and you get great, awesome content. And by the way, if you're not a premium subscriber but want to hear these episodes of these premium content, all you've got to do is just go to shop.fatherleofeeds.com, and we thank you for your support. And welcome back to our continued deep dish discussion with Les, or Leslie. What was it like coming into America with a name like Leslie? Very English, but very not American.
Right. Well, the connotations, the Leslie...
girl's name.
Right.
Yep.
It's actually a Scottish name. I have no idea of what the meaning is, but it's a very Scottish name.
Scottish, okay. And for a lot of Americans, it's all the same.
Right, right.
Shrek.
Right, the size of the island together is probably like, you know, the size of Maryland or something.
A little bit bigger than that, but
right. I mean, but how many Englands and the United Kingdoms can you fit into the whole, you know, structure of the United States?
Sure, a lot.
But
I mean, did you get, when you came to America and you're this 21-year-old whippersnapper,
mm-hmm.
and athletic with a Roman face, by the way,
mm-hmm.
where did you land?
In Michigan, Mayville, Michigan, at this summer camp. And it's pretty famous and pretty well known for having individuals travel from throughout the United States to attend this summer camp. It's,
got it.
It's called the Fowler Center. John Fowler himself was an individual with cerebral palsy that started a summer camp, I think, in 1958.
How well were you received? Were you welcomed with open arms? I mean, did you find America a welcoming place?
Initially, yeah. I mean, you know, you're stuck in like this commune, the summer camp,
sure.
for like 8 weeks, so you don't really get to see America.
But everybody likes you because you've got an accent.
Well, yeah.
There's a fascination.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's the fascination with the Uber.
Sure.
And people are like, oh, you got an accent. Your name's Leslie. You're not female. And what are you doing here?
Yeah. And so you started off there. What brought you to at least the Maryland area? And how many jobs did you have in between all that?
Well, in between... working at the summer camps in Michigan, undergraduate. I would come here for the summers.
Uh-huh.
94, 95, 96, there was a big soccer tournament in England, so I had to get my priorities straight and stay there for that.
Oh, gosh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
97, I worked in Massachusetts, and it was the last day of the summer camp there that I answered an advert to come and work for an agency, a national agency with a local chapter in Baltimore, to work as a residential manager. And so I did that at the summer camp, and the residential manager with individuals living in the community.
Sure.
You know, part of the deinstitutionalization.
How old are these people that are living there?
30 to 60.
Okay.
You know, they're adults. People with developmental disabilities, they're funded until the age of 21, mandatory education.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the age of 21, they have to seek services, and then it's a triage effect of...
Sure, sure.
...depending on their needs, how they get funded. And so having been a case manager for that with the state of Maryland, contractor through the state of Maryland, I've been responsible for filing their documents and paperwork to achieve that funding.
You know, that's a particular part of society that's very vulnerable and susceptible mm-hmm. to a lot of abuse. I mm-hmm. mean, does your heart go out to that? I mean, because you seem like a really nice person anyway and that you're willing to care. I mean, mm-hmm. where did this your compassion probably came from your own upbringing?
I agree with you. It does. You've got to walk in the shoes to a certain extent. I mean, everyone's got a story. And those stories are different, and that's what makes the world an interesting place. If mm-hmm. you all had the same premise, we'd
sure.
probably be, well, whatever. I already know about that.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, with your love for soccer
mm-hmm.
and your love, obviously, for people, what do you got going on that's kind of combining these two loves?
Well, I'm trying to put a business together. It's called Anything's Possible, which is the mantra of my life, that anything is possible
okay.
when you try. And
by the
work.
Way, you're the only Uber driver that has given me a gift. Two in my hands right now, Leslie, as soon as I open my door and welcome them into my home, and we got some Chinese takeaway lunch. He got the drunken noodles, and I got a chicken and broccoli thing, all right? So these... these interviews are always around some sort of meal. But he gave me two things. What, can you kind of explain what it is? This is a blue kind of scarf, kind of thick.
Yeah.
What does it say?
And with a soccer kind of mantra, the stripes.
Yep.
And anything's possible is the name of the business.
Okay.
Which I, you know, explained.
You want to start this thing. Right. And then you also gave me a nice pin, which is called Anything Possible as well.
Yep.
And this Anything Possible has one objective. And what is that?
Well, to make it feasible in life, that if you concentrate and you work hard, anything can be possible.
But particularly for who? Are you going to go back to people with mental?
Yeah, I have my intellectual disabilities. I have four target markets.
Okay.
I have individuals that are in the foster care system, individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities, individuals with the foster care system, and the juvenile justice.
Oh.
And my graduate paper, I studied conflict management, conflict resolution.
That part of the conversation, and I wanted to pick a fight with you to see how you were going to handle that.
Right. And so my graduate degree, master's degree, like I said, from the University of Baltimore. I did a AmeriCorps placement with Baltimore City Schools and Community Mediation Maryland.
Okay.
And it was for like an 8-month placement. And we'd go to schools to do truancy and absenteeism.
Okay.
And to find out why kids weren't going to school. And it had come down to mundane situations that the kid was playing video games all night, fall asleep at 4 or 6 o'clock in the morning. The single parent would come home and find that Johnny's been sleeping or was sleeping on the sofa and assume that he's been sleeping all night. Then have difficulties in the daytime doing his lessons or whatever. And then it would come to pass that Johnny had been playing video games all night. That's why he was struggling to stay up or study during the day.
Sure. So it's common sense.
Right. But we would have mediations, bring the school and the parents together and come out with, a mutual understanding that we need to, this is happening. We can't change what's happened, but we can change what's going to move forward. And so we'd come up with an agreement with the school and the children that this guy could maintain his education placement in school. And little Johnny would say, okay, I'm not going to play video games all night. What I need to do, I need to be accountable for myself.
So you're taking your background with conflict mediation, your love for soccer, and your compassion for people with disabilities of all types. What is Anything Possible going to then do physically or structurally?
Well, what I want to do is initially set up soccer programs to local youth in our neighborhoods.
Okay.
And in my neighborhood, which is the Greenmount and 31st area of Baltimore, by Union Memorial.
Sure.
I'm trying to work with local authorities. There's another nonprofit called Strong City, and they have access to a rec center. I'm trying to work with them to get the kids to come together to set up a sports team. And then from there, have them become tomorrow's mediators.
But what about a guy like me? I have many disabilities. I mean, some more obvious than others. But I hate soccer. What are you going to do to make me like this?
Well, I want to teach life skills through sports, and it could be anything. The vehicle, I think you have to have a passion for the vehicle, and soccer is my passion. Soccer's the vehicle.
Vehicle, like what kind of car do you drive? It's like a
bright orange Prius.
It was a bright orange Prius.
But it's a conversation piece because I got that to be bright orange.
To be conversational.
Right, because when I call a customer and say, hey, I'm the bright orange Prius, it sounds a little bit better on a drab dark night.
Yeah.
I'm the gray car, find me out. Good luck with that.
Right, that's awesome. So you really are kind of hitting a lot of target things. Now, you kind of made a promise to me that you're going to make me like soccer. How are you going to do that? Because I will enter into a conflict with you.
Right. Can't make you do anything, but what I can try to do is sell you on the benefits and the wares. And so since I've been in the States, I support this team from London called Tottenham Hotspur.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Right. And they're from Northeast London. And they're not the Real Madrids or the Manchester Uniteds in the world that win everything. But we can hold our own every so often.
But they're kind of the underdogs then.
Right. And so we've been
very Leslie to do that.
Right. And we've been doing well. And I remember I've been supporting this team since I was 8 years old. The first recess, I think you call it in America, the playtime, 10 o'clock in the morning. I'd supported West Ham and Norwich City the week before, whoever was the top. And I was like, 8 years old, 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to support Tottenham. They could be on the other side of the earth. They could be down the street. I don't know where they're from or who they're from, but I'm going to support them. And then since I've been eight, I've been supporting them. And then come in here. You're a priest, you know, you have to sell the word of God and all this kind of stuff. That's kind of what I've been doing with Tottenham. I've probably, hopefully, attracted like 10 to 15 pilgrims since I've been here to become Tottenham fans. And I tell them, well, like we were talking in the car, the Purgatory, and then the movie In Bruges.
Okay, tell me about that. Tell our listeners about In Bruges.
Right, the movie, I can't remember the Irish actor's name, but there's a line in the movie In Bruges where, without giving too much of the premise of the story, the main character, Colin Farrell, I think his name is, he has committed an act that's antisocial, basically, and he's looking for solace and guidance from the older mentor of this premise of why they're involved in the movie. The older guy says to him, he goes, well, it's neither here or there. It's not good or bad. And the guy does it, and he said, it's purgatory. And he's like, the younger guy, Colin Farrell, doesn't understand what purgatory is. So he says, it's like Tottenham. They're neither good or bad. And he's like, the light goes on in his head. He goes, oh yeah, Tottenham. I get you.
Your football team is purgatory.
Right.
And that's going to make me like soccer.
You get frustrated, but in that frustration, you see, there's an endearment to them. And so that's basically what I've done. I've tried to say with my Anything's Possible business that I'm doing, with Tottenham Hotspur and anything else that I've seen the good and the bad thing. It's like going to a buffet, like you work with food. It's like, you know, you don't have to eat everything in the buffet. You take what you like, leave what you don't like, and that's what I've done in life, you know? And the things that I do like is being helpful, forthcoming, and truthful with helping in my endeavors. Now, I'm not a saint. I'm not perfect at it, but I'm trying to attain enlightenment, per se, and I'm trying to be the best that I can be in doing what I need to do.
And let's talk about that enlightenment again. You are a rideshare driver that I met. Fascinating kind of background, cool accent, and obviously with all of your skills with conflict management, obviously the experience of growing up in the foster care system, and then coming to America, a bright orange Prius, for goodness sakes, with Anything Possible. By the way, where can people learn about that?
Well, I have a webpage called www.anythingspossiblemd.net.
MD.net. Right. So anythingpossible.md.net. Okay.
And it's in construction because, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I'm slowly but surely working with the team players out there, the rest of the team, to make it possible. But my clear objective is to teach life skills through conflict resolution management, mediation, and, you know, facilitation, to learn the appropriate life skills to be successful in life. And it's a mirror image of my own situation, predicament.
Sure.
You know, yes, I've made mistakes along the way, but thankfully when it was going too awry, I had caregivers that would guide me back to the straight path.
Okay, so two things from that. What are your sources of enlightenment?
Soccer.
Okay. Oh, and, like soccer really is a type of religion for you then.
Yeah, it's the constant that I've had in my life, good and bad, that I could have a bad week if Tottenham lose. I could have a great week if Tottenham win. I mean, and it's the mainstay. It's how it doesn't sell the same here in the States, but it's like, I can always support in the Yankees or the Orioles or any other baseball or football team here. You
I love it. Orioles.
Right, you know. But it's, you find a kinship, and whatever that kinship can be. It could be a mentor in the community. It could be an elder in the community.
Are there any other sources of enlightenment for you? And I'm just simply asking. I mean, is there a religion background? Is there a spirituality that you kind of encompass? Or is soccer your...
I joined a group in England when I was actually in foster care in the village Kingswood. I actually joined this church group, young church group called the Crusaders.
Christians?
Yes.
Okay. Crusader,
not the best name for a church.
Probably not.
Youth church group. But so I joined the Crusaders, and, you know, I'm not very religious per se, but I appreciate and acknowledge those that are of all denominations and faiths, because, once again, it's what makes the world interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, once again, it's like going to the buffet. I don't have to take what I don't want.
By the way, folks, he's talking about buffet, not buffet. Because I love the accent, dude.
But I
should just get you to, like, be my voiceover for some things here. Right. And this is key for me. Like, you know, obviously sports are a form of your inspiration, mm-hmm. and just even reflecting on your own experiences. And this Crusades group, did that have a very powerful impact on you?
Yes and no. I mean, the Royal Wedding that just happened this past weekend with the sermon. I don't know if you watched it, but...
I did. It was all right.
He lit it up.
Well, that's what people think.
Because I said to my wife, I said, watch the demographics that are in that church.
Sure.
It's a different sales technique. They're not used to that.
Sure.
And I was proven right. And they've been talking about it in the media.
Sure.
Now, the message is the same if you do it in a monotone voice or an exciting voice to deliver the message.
Sure.
When I grew up in England, the message was very monotone, you know, not to sound detrimental, but, and on the fifth day,
sure.
the light shone down, and, you know, 3 hours later, yeah. you're like, come on already, you know? So, I mean, that's fine if that's your place, but if I start talking about Tottenham Hotspur and anything's possible, and, and on the fifth day, anything's possible,
Tottenham Hotspur, LLC
membership, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and start talking about the nuances of the business and the line type and all this kind of stuff, you'd be like, oh, I'm done already. I need to show you and share that in passion and vigor with you. Tottenham Hotspur are the greatest team. They're not going to win every week, but guess what? They're frustrated the out of you, you know, because... That's,
I mean, you could even say the F word and it would sound a little more charming
right.
with an English accent, to be perfectly right. honest with you. So I've just got to ask you just a few more questions here. And one is, besides obviously wanting to get anythingpossible.md.net off the ground, what would be kind of like living the dream for you? Some little English lad transferred from home to home, and now you're in the great state of Maryland, in the great country of America. I mean, what would be kind of your, what would be the perfect kind of life for you?
I guess my purpose, mission statement per se is that...
I mean, you want to be married?
Right.
Do you have kids?
No kids.
No kids.
But we take care of disadvantaged dogs, the abandoned dogs and animals.
Okay,
and
you're animal lovers.
Yeah.
Okay, so no kids, though.
No, so, I mean, you know, and that's fine. You know, one interest and one... pursuit and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, once again, you mediate and find out the good and the bad points and come up with a consensus.
Okay.
And so our consensus is that we take care of animals that have been abandoned. And we've done that for a few
rich times or middle class?
I don't know. England has a class society. America allegedly doesn't, but I think...
Oh, we do.
Not,
like, definitely there's a middle
right,
class
it's not,
and lower
it's,
and upper
right,
class.
But it's not... You're not in England... A police officer is an A1 class type. Someone that cleans the street or the bathrooms is a C2 type.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you could probably align that to the Indian caste system.
What kind of bloke would you be?
The guy that goes to the pub every Friday.
Okay.
You know, kind of guy. But working class,
so,
you know.
You, like, your dream would be, hey, married, dog-loving, and taking care of people with mental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, middle class, upper class, just kind of...
Middle class, but
okay.
I wouldn't say...
Would you still be Ubering and Lyfting?
Yes, because it's one of the things that make me who I am. But the...
That's the interesting part.
But my passion in life, I want to be enriched and successful just like anyone else. But my motivations is not necessarily to be wealthy with how much green I've got in my pocket.
Sure.
My sharing the wealth comes from knowing that I've assisted someone else be successful in their life. I am only here today because other people shared their passion for me to be successful.
Now tell me this. If you could preach to me, especially with an English accent, because sometimes I fake an accent just to get people to listen to me. It's kind of weird to see a Filipino talk with an English accent, but it's fun. But if you could preach to me on how to be a better person, even how to be a better priest, what would you say? Reverend Leslie?
Be yourself and be honest and be truthful. And, you know, treat others as like you would like to be treated yourself. The golden rule. And I try to implement that every day. I mean, one of the things I do, I referee soccer.
Okay.
And so I tell the guys the players that I referee with, I said, play the whistle, play the advantage, which means I'm going to see fouls. I'm not going to see fouls. Do what you know which is best to play the game. You can spend as much time as you want yelling and screaming at me, but you're taking time out of your game to do that. Concentrate. I'm just like anyone else. I'm trying to be as good as I can be in that game. You know, I might make mistakes. I might make a great call, but just go with the flow.
All right.
I'll work with you to do that.
And how many years have you been doing social rides?
Since 2015, I believe.
2015. And of these, rate me as, like, how weird was that ride, like, with this little priest? I mean, is it up there and one of the strangest rides, or am I pretty typical as a ride share?
No, it was different because I haven't done, no one else has invited me to do a radio show and it was all that. But, I mean, I have a saying that the best opportunities are those least expected sometimes.
That's right.
And now if you go looking for it, you never find it. If you're not even looking for it, it comes to your doorstep.
That's right.
And that's just life in life generally. Take what you can get.
So I'm going to paint a picture for you, ladies and gentlemen, as we bring this to a close. Leslie picks me up. We get to a part where he was actually going to take a different route than I normally get to. And I told him, being a front seat passenger driver, I told him, why don't you take this way? We get there and there is major traffic, blocked, nothing is moving. And I should have just taken his way the first time. And so the image is, I have got only a few minutes before they're going to start to board. And Leslie takes his bright orange Prius and he rides across the medium of the highway on the grassy part. And I'm wondering if this Prius can even get up that far. It was pretty impressive. And you know what? We went his way, and it worked. Leslie, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know it must have been weird, but I learned a lot from you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And when we return, I'm going to return with my carryout order, reflecting on what I heard, and more importantly, having you listen to what I heard when I was willing to listen to a very unique experience, just reminding me that we're all on a pilgrimage, we're all on a journey, and hopefully we get there safely. And with Leslie driving, I think we can. We'll return with more Shoot the Shiitake. One of my talks called How to Get Your Family to Heaven is available online at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. It is a talk that I gave at one of the big conferences that helps you to understand our role in our life, helping to get our family to heaven. And the best way to do that is to feed them body, mind, and soul. So if you want to help get your family to heaven, and obviously only with God's grace, all you got to do is get this CD, How to Get Your Family to Heaven, at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for our carry-out order on this very unique interview, which I hope you found edifying because I sure did. You know, one of the first things that I kind of take away from this is that my ride to and from the airport is now just so much more pleasant because we are becoming more socially minded. And I just kind of want to challenge taxi cab drivers to not be just so much about business. Make it about an experience. And that's like the first carryout order that I kind of have with my experience talking to Les Maynard. The social minded cab ride service where you can actually rate your driver is only challenged because guess what? They can rate you, and it helps us to make sure that we're not acting like jerks. I am grateful that I've got a pretty high rating on Uber and on Lyft. And I'm also grateful that I can actually see if I want someone to drive me. You know, there was only one time, and I've been doing Uber for several years now, where I've actually had to report somebody. And it was so impressive because this was a horrible experience. I think the guy had a problem. I think he had a serious problem, mental problem. And he kept talking about politics and getting angry and using like harsh explicatives. And then on top of that, he started talking about sex. Like, and I'm sitting in the back seat. I just want to get out of this car so fast. And as soon as I got out, I contacted Uber, and gratefully, they responded so quickly. They credited me that whole ride, and they said they were going to talk to this guy as soon as possible. But I should have known because he only had like two stars out of maybe five or something like that. And it just reminds me of how antisocial we have become. And cab drivers are sometimes the worst offenders. You know, I don't care if a cab driver is a foreigner and doesn't speak English well. I do think they need to be somewhat pleasant and, you know, at least be paying attention to you. Like in New York City, I have to take a cab quite a bit because it's actually easier to do a cab than Uber. That's just the God's honest truth. But cab drivers are just kind of mean there, you know? I mean, that stereotype is very present. And so what I'm really grateful for is that an app like Uber and a rideshare program like Lyft, they're just trying to make something like a ride a little bit more pleasant experience. So one of the carryout orders for me is just make sure that I'm a little bit more socially minded, which is so impressive about Les because he was so socially minded. I didn't know what religion he was. I'm sure that he didn't have much of one because he was a foster child, bounced around from one place to the next. And so it's hard to have any stability. But he did have some morals. In fact, he had a lot of morals simply because of the experiences he had with a foster sister who was mentally and severely handicapped, disabled. And I was kind of moved by Les's compassion for working with people who have disabilities. You know, off the microphone, he shared with me some of the challenges that he has to go through in taking care of people who have great difficulties and disabilities taking care of themselves, from personal hygiene to just feeding, cleaning up, and taking care of themselves, you know, being extra patient. And so in this whole theme of being socially minded, Les just reminded me of just making sure that I say an extra prayer for all of these people who work in very challenging situations, working with people with special needs, or just even working with people who can't take care of themselves. And I'm thinking of people in the nursing home. And so just this idea of making sure that we don't forget a part of society that just needs a little bit of help and attention. So I was just kind of moved and inspired by his example. He really taught me quite a lot, you know, just how he has grown up in a foster care system. You know, these are just things that you don't think about unless you watch like the movie or the play Oliver. And he was like a perfect example of it. You know, I mean, here's a kid who got bounced around, but he had just such great morals. And guess what? His experience led him to develop a greater compassion for others. And I guess you heard me say it at the very beginning. You're really never going to know what someone goes through unless you walk a mile in their shoes, or in this case, drove a few miles in this person's car, which was very interesting, by the way, a Prius. And oh, by the way, police, I want to let you know that the cops who were kind of doing the traffic control, because I told how we drove in the median on the grass, it was only because the cops were telling us to do it. So Uber, don't get mad at this guy. He was doing what the cops were telling him to do. Just drive on the medium so that we don't get stuck. And, you know, they were directing traffic. So he was doing 100% something very legal. And he was actually concerned because he didn't want to go on the medium of the highway until he saw the cops directing him. Again, his social mindedness, I was very much appreciative of that. And as a Catholic priest, sometimes our very traditionally minded Catholics who are considered quote unquote more conservative can sometimes be accused of not being socially minded. You know, they're not socially justice oriented, while those who are more social justice oriented aren't necessarily looking at the traditions and the dogma, you know, and the sacred nature of the church. And so for me, sometimes I'm accused of being a conservative, and Les helped me to remember being socially minded. Trust me, folks, some circles I'm considered a liberal, some circles I'm considered a conservative. But I just know that on this ride, it wasn't about conservative or liberalism, even though obviously Les might be a little bit more socially minded and therefore leading to the left. I never asked him about politics. I should have, actually. That would have been an awesome conversation for sure. But he just kind of helped to remind me that there are people in this world who we don't pay attention to. And we need probably more kind-hearted people to work in these very difficult situations, taking care of the mentally disabled, taking care of people in the nursing home. So you know what? For all of you people who work there, thank you very, very much. And I will definitely keep you in my prayers. The other thing about his social-mindedness is his devotion to Tottenham Hotspur. I didn't even understand him fully because of his accent, which was super cool, by the way. And so if you like the English accent, you're also going to love the special guest that I interviewed in the Learning from Leftovers Deeper Dish discussion, which I send out to all of our premium subscribers. So all of those who donate $10 or more, thank you for your generous support. But you're going to hear another awesome English accented man. His name is David, and he was an awesome guest talking about his conversion back to the Catholic Church, his reversion, actually. He was Catholic. He leaves to become, you know, a Presbyterian English, I don't even know what it was called, to be honest with you. I know that it's in the interview itself, but he was basically leaving the Catholic Church but returns to it finally. So you're going to hear all about him for all those premium subscribers. But Les's devotion to that underdog of a soccer team is also just connected to his very socially minded mentality. His like whole brain, his whole life is geared toward even rooting for the underdog. I was very moved by this, especially since he said it's like purgatory. He was going to try to convert me to be a soccer loving clergyman. I don't like soccer. I think it's boring. But I think that I would enjoy it if I was actually watching it with Les so that he can kind of explain it. But just his devotion to this underdog team, wow, pretty impressive. And, you know, I think what I was most moved by was that even though he didn't grow up with any formal religion, I gave him a chance to preach to me in his words, be yourself, be honest, be truthful. The golden rule, treat each other as you want to be treated. It just shows the universality of the Catholic faith, of the Christian teachings. No matter who you are, what accent you speak with, or whatever language or religion you have, these are very good rules for all of us who have to live in a social environment. You know, we as the Catholic Church, we don't live in a bubble. We have to be socially minded and less taking care of underprivileged people and people with particular disabilities simply because he grew up in a foster care service. I'm sure that leads him to doing the work that he does. And, you know, with his foundation and his job that he's trying to create for himself, anything's possible. It's kind of like a ministry, really. I'm just very impressed with him, and I learned so much from him and all of that just from a ride to the airport. And it just goes to show that if you're open to conversations, even in situations that might be a little bit unique and awkward, especially since it's just like a rideshare program, guess what? Conversations can lead to conversion. And that's what I experienced, and that's what I hope you experience when you heard that deep dish discussion with my very special guest. So that's simply it for me. I know I've got to be more socially minded. I gotta be more willing to have conversations with people. I have to be willing to make myself vulnerable by even welcoming strangers. I'm not saying in my car, but I will tell you, I did pick up a hitchhiker once. That might be for another episode. But just the idea of welcoming someone into your personal space like a rideshare driver, I say kudos to you, Lyft and Uber. Good for you for helping our world be a little bit more socially minded. Granted, I know it's a business. I know it's a business. But I think what their business is ultimately doing, trying to bring this world closer together, one ride at a time. So for all of you who are listening, I can't thank you enough for listening and for sharing these episodes to everyone and anyone. Please make sure that you subscribe and make sure that you kind of subscribe to one of our platforms on our website at fatherleofeeds.com. And of course, your support helps me to continue having these amazing discussions with amazing people who are not necessarily connected to the Catholic Church, but helps me me even stay more connected as a priest. Yup, an Uber driver helped me to become a better priest. That's my carryout order to be more socially minded. So between now and the next time we hear from each other, I hope you enjoyed this special Shoot the Shiitake. And remember, stay hungry. And I hope you enjoyed this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, an episode brought to you by a public service announcement of World Meeting of Families 2018 in Dublin, Ireland, from August 21st and concluding on Sunday, August 26, 2018, with a special mass with Pope Francis. But in those days of the World Meeting of Families, get ready for an awesome lineup of speakers. And guess what? I'm honored to be part of it. So you can learn about where I'm going to be speaking, especially on the theme of the gospel of the family, joy for the world. You can learn all about it at worldmeeting2018.ie.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.